I'm Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly, making it official. President Trump signs his first major piece of legislation into law. We have the latest. Health on the Hill. HHS Secretary nominee RFK Jr. faces questions from lawmakers as he hopes to be confirmed. Tragedy in India. Dozens are killed in a stampede at the world's largest religious gathering. And listen up. Pope Francis tells the faithful how they can imitate the example of Saint Joseph. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, the Trump administration reverses its controversial pause on federal grants. This after groups like Catholic Charities urge the administration to change course. However, the White House says tonight, in the coming weeks and months, more executive action will continue to end the egregious waste of federal funding. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, good evening to you. Even though they lifted the pause on those federal grants, the press secretary said today, the executive orders issued by the president on funding reviews remain in full force and effect.
Tonight, an about-face, President Donald Trump's budget office rescinds a memo freezing spending on federal grants. President Trump addressed the move in the East Room.
And I'm restating right now to correct any confusion that the media has purposely and somehow, for whatever reason, created. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid have not been affected by any action we're taking in any way, shape, or form.
The Monday evening order from the White House Office of Management and Budget sparked uncertainty over a crucial financial lifeline for states, schools, and organizations that rely on trillions of dollars from Washington.
We are merely looking at parts of the big bureaucracy where there has been tremendous waste and fraud and abuse.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer blasted the president.
Did President Trump know that he was essentially shuttering community health centers, rural hospitals, food pantries?
And while he was in the East Room, President Trump signing his administration's first piece of legislation, the Lake and Riley Act, into law. It mandates the detention and potential deportation of people in the U.S. illegally who are accused of theft and violent crimes before they have actually been convicted. Riley went for a run in February of 2024 and was killed by Jose Antonio Ibarra, a Venezuelan national in the U.S. illegally, who was sentenced to life without parole. The measure swiftly passed the Republican-controlled Congress with some Democratic support.
Most importantly, I want to thank our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, because without his sacrifices, Lakin's story would have ended on that horrific day that she was taken from us. But because of him, we can continue living knowing that we will see Lakin again.
Immigration advocates say the law could trigger mass roundups over minor offenses. The signing follows a flurry of first-week executive orders designed to better seal off the U.S.-Mexico border and eventually move to deport millions of illegal immigrants. Also tonight, buyouts. The Trump administration will pay federal employees who agree to leave their jobs, but they only have a few days to decide. Opponents of the administration's move called a purging of federal employees. But outside the White House this morning, Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt shot down that accusation.
What's your response? That's absolutely false. This is a suggestion to federal workers that they have to return to work. And if they don't, then they have the option to resign. And this administration is very generously offering to pay them for 8 months.
And separately tonight, President Trump is directing the opening of a detention center at Guantanamo Bay that would house up to 30,000 migrants who are living in the U.S. illegally. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr. faced his first Senate confirmation hearing as President Donald Trump's nominee to become the next Secretary of Health and Human Services. He was grilled about his views on vaccines and abortion, as well as potential conflicts of interest that he would face in the role. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales reports. Eric.
Well, good evening, Tracy. While several of Trump's cabinet picks have generated controversy, none have generated more than that is of Kennedy. He has drawn a number of controversy. He has been the subject of negative political ads, along with just this week, his own cousin Caroline Kennedy wrote a scathing letter asking the Senate to deny his confirmation, describing him as a predator. Well, today, Kennedy started off his testimony with how he would make the country healthy again and deal with childhood obesity.
School lunch programs could be a driver for helping kids. We shouldn't be giving 60% of the kids in school processed food that is making them sick. We shouldn't be spending 10% of the SNAP program on sugar drinks.
Democrats were quick to turn their focus to Kennedy's previous statements about vaccines.
It's time to make sure that we blow the whistle on actually what your views are. At least we're starting.
We need to move
Senator,
on.
I support the measles vaccine. I support the polio vaccine. I will do nothing as HHS secretary that makes it difficult or discourages people from taking either of those
anybody
vaccines.
Who
questions then shifted to how he would handle Medicare, Medicaid, private insurances, and mental health.
I was a heroin addict for 14 years. I've been 42 years in recovery. I go to 12-step meetings every day, so I hear the stories every day. And I hear the many stories about denial of or the barriers to access to care. And we need to improve that, citing things that we can be doing, including cooperatives, which President Trump has supported, including health savings accounts, which President Trump has supported. But all of these things to make people more accountable for their own health.
The abortion issue then took center stage in how he would enact President Trump's pro-life policies.
Every abortion is a tragedy. I agree with him that we cannot be a moral nation if we have 1.2 million abortions a year. I agree with him that the states should control abortion. President Trump has told me that he wants to end late-term abortions. And he wants to protect conscience exemptions, and that he wants to end federal funding for abortions here or abroad.
Pro-life Senator James Lankford also asked about FDA failing to present the side effects of the chemical abortion pill mifepristone. Democrats countered with numerous studies claiming the abortion pill is safe.
Mifepristone is safe. The only reason it's under question in 2025 is because people with a political agenda have been out lying about it. Women deserve to know if Mr. Kennedy will abuse his power as our country's chief health officer to essentially implement a national abortion ban.
After the hearing, pro-life organizations fired back, saying that the abortion pill is not safe. The American Association of OBGYNs actually made a statement on X that potential deadly complications could take place, such as hemorrhage and sepsis. They also said that they stressed the need for medical supervision. By the way, Kennedy's confirmation hearing continues tomorrow. He will appear before the Senate Health Committee. He can afford to lose only 3 Republican votes when the Senate actually gathers in full. I also want to let you know about someone else's fate. Former New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez was sentenced to 11 years in prison. He was found guilty of bribery, fraud, and a variety of other charges. He was once the chair of the powerful Senate Foreign Relations Committee. You may recall that the FBI ended up finding 13 gold bars and nearly $500,000 in cash inside his home. Tracy.
Eric. All right, now to the Middle East, where the ceasefire moves ahead and Hamas is set to release 3 more Israeli female hostages. Additionally, 5 Thai nationals are set to be released. Meanwhile, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu met with U.S. Middle East envoy Steve Witkoff in Jerusalem today on the heels of an invite for Netanyahu to visit President Trump at the White House. This comes as hundreds of thousands of Palestinians return to their homes, finding extensive damage. Meanwhile, Israel is preparing to outlaw the main UN agency for Palestinian refugees tomorrow. Israel accuses UNRWA of being complicit with Hamas and passed legislation last year to ban the organization. The country has yet to reveal how it will enforce the ban. UNRWA says the move will deepen the suffering of the Palestinian people. All right, now to India, where at least 30 people are dead and dozens more injured in a stampede at the world's largest religious gathering. The tragedy happened after pilgrims tried to jump barricades during a procession. An eyewitness says that, quote, there was no chance for escape there was pushing from all sides. Rwandan-backed rebels have captured more towns in eastern Congo in an effort to expand their control. The advances are raising fears of prolonged occupation by rebels who say they plan to set up a new administration. Eastern Congo is rich in minerals critical to the world's technology, drawing the attention of armed groups. Hundreds of thousands of Goma residents are attempting to escape the fighting. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including he is one of the newest cardinals, and he's talking to EWTN. In an exclusive interview, hear what he has to say are some of the biggest issues facing the church in his country. And President Trump signed an executive order on sex change among minors, what it means, and what happens next. Welcome back. The head of the church in Santiago, Chile, is speaking out against a pro-abortion push in the South American country. In an exclusive interview with EWTN News, Cardinal Fernando Chamali spoke about controversial topics like clergy abuse in the South American country.
It has been a very painful process for the victims, very painful for all the communities, very painful for those accused that have had to resign from the priesthood for the families. But there is no turning back, because it is very contradictory that a person who is consecrated to God, that should be the person of trust, turns such a sacred place like the church and makes it a dangerous place for their integrity.
Cardinal Chamali adds that he recently met with Pope Francis to further discuss the response to the abuse crisis. To watch the full interview, just tune in to EWTN's YouTube channel tomorrow. Well, in a little more than a week since taking office, President Trump has signed hundreds of executive orders. One thing that has made many headlines is the order ending federal funding for sex reassignment surgery for minors. The order calls for several changes. Among other things, the government will no longer fund or promote any kind of sex reassignment surgeries or treatment for minors. It also calls on all agencies to rescind or amend all policies that rely on guidance from the World Professional Association for Transgender Health. And it calls on the Secretary of Health and Human Services to publish review of all available literature on the best care practices of minors who, quote, assert gender dysphoria. As regards sex change, a recent declaration from the Vatican states the human body shares in the dignity of the image of God. Such a truth deserves to be remembered, especially when it comes to sex change, for humans are inseparably composed of both body and soul. It follows that any sex change intervention, as a rule, risks threatening the unique dignity the person has received from the moment of conception. And joining us now to discuss is Beth Serio with the organization Do No Harm. She is also a registered nurse. Beth, great to be with you today. First, let me get your reaction to the executive order. And what, if anything, have you heard from parents?
We think that the executive order is, of course, an amazing, momentous occasion to celebrate in this fight against gender ideology. We're just so thankful for President Trump and his administration for taking this strong stance that demonstrates his commitment to protecting children. And, you know, you ask about the reaction from parents, and I would say it's truly one of jubilation. Many people have been fighting for this for so long, have been trying to educate the public on the danger of these sex change interventions on minors. And it's so great to now see true progress being made to end these interventions and put it behind us as a nation.
Yeah, Beth, what struck you the most about this executive order, and what do you think in this order will really have the most impact?
It's there's so much to this executive order that could be said, so many great things. But I think one of the biggest things for me is just the prohibiting federal funding of so-called transition procedures for minors, through whether it's federal grants or health insurance and benefit programs. It removes the burden to the American taxpayer, whose tax dollars have been helping to fund these procedures for years. And we know that these so-called gender transition for minors is wildly unpopular with the American public. But for years, we were forced to help fund it through our tax dollars. And this executive order is saying that's not going to happen anymore.
Yeah, and that is a good thing for sure. And this is just one of several executive orders regarding transgender ideology that we know. What are some of the others? Talk to us about those other executive orders and really the significance of all of this.
Right. So, you know, President Trump has been obviously hard at work with many executive orders that just show his commitment to biological truth and defending children from the and the American public, frankly, from the dangers of child sex change transitions. He's done last week multiple executive orders protecting against the Title IX and women in sports. And women prisons. So this is because it shows, you know, just a long, this is just one long stream of his of actions to show his commitment to protecting children.
Yeah. Before I let you go, we're not a whole lot of time left, but in the executive order, the White House calls for all agencies to end any reliance on standards of care drafted by WPATH. That's the World Professional Association for Transgender Care. Talk to us more about this organization, maybe for those who don't know much about it, and quickly, if you can talk about some of those standards.
Sure. So the World Professional Association of Transgender Healthcare, Transgender Health is an activist organization, is what it is. It's driven by their commitment to radical transgender ideology that pushes these procedures on children. And, you know, so they're not motivated at all by the sound science that shows that there are very serious complications to putting children on, cross-sex hormones, puberty blockers, surgical interventions. But the WPATH has long since ignored all of that sound research and instead just pushed children onto these procedures, even denying things like that they're at a minimum age, saying that, you know, almost no age is too young to potentially be on this path. So we at Do No Harm think it is a really great thing that we are going to end our reliance on WPATH as being a standard of care. It's not a standard of care. It's just straight activism. And we need science to be our standard of care.
Well, Beth, thank you so much for weighing in. We really appreciate it. God bless.
Thank you so much.
And in other news, the Federal Reserve leaves its key interest rates unchanged. This more cautious approach comes as it's wait to see where inflation is heading next and the policies of the new administration. The Fed says that inflation remains a little high, but the job market is solid. A healthier job market and more stubborn inflation typically signal fewer cuts in the coming months. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, a holy model, which saint the Pope says we should all try to follow. Plus, it is Catholic Schools Week. We'll show you how thousands of students across the country came together to pray the rosary. Pope Francis reminds the faithful of the importance of listening.
Dal momento del nostro battesimo vive e cresce nella nostra vita.
During his weekly talk at the Vatican, the Holy Father encouraged the faithful to ask for the grace to listen more than we talk. Pope Francis also reflected on the example of Saint Joseph, saying that we can follow in his footsteps by being attentive to the will of God and welcome Christ into our lives. All right, now to Haiti and a grim milestone. We recently passed the 15th anniversary of the deadly earthquake that devastated the Caribbean nation. And one Catholic group is working there to combat hunger and poverty. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Sittigan has more.
The earthquake was 15 years ago, this month of January 2010. But now people in Haiti say this is even worse.
The 7.0 magnitude earthquake killed an estimate 300,000 people. Prior to the disaster, Haiti suffered from poverty, a failing government, and gang violence. Now, 15 years later, the situation is no better.
The problem in Haiti today, including the gangs, is the poverty. It's not a violence problem. They're just hungry. Children are hungry. They feel the pain in their stomach. And there's no food at home. So they need to go somewhere else, and they are joining this mafia, these gangs, or taking the guns. just for eating once a day.
In the middle of this crisis, Mary's Meals is a lifeline, serving up daily meals to kids in 500 schools across Haiti with the help of local volunteers. Founded in 2002, the global charity was named after Mary, the mother of Jesus. It draws inspiration from her life of raising a child in poor and challenging circumstances. For children growing up in need, a hot meal at school is more than just food. It's a reason to stay in school and out of trouble.
We feed 2.5 million children all over the world, in the poorest countries of the world, meaning Haiti, Yemen, Africa, of course, South Sudan. There are so many people who are dreaming with a piece of meat or to go to school. Mary's Meals has the hope in its DNA. Of course, we give hope to those children who benefit of our school meals, but then the families and then the communities. It is all about the local community.
A simple solution to world hunger is the charity's motto. The mission's strength is in its simplicity: feeding children, bringing hope, and giving life, one meal at a time.
How can you tackle the hunger in the world? But if I tell you it costs $25 per year to feed a child every single day at school. Sounds easy, right?
In Rome, Benedictia de Grian, EWTN News Nightly.
Well, finally tonight here in the United States, we are in the middle of Catholic Schools Week, and among the initiatives was an online gathering of thousands of children to pray the rosary. The Pontifical Mission Societies USA organized the event. It took place over Zoom. The online rosary featured children from 77 Catholic schools across more than a dozen dioceses. Monsignor Roger Landry, the head of the Pontifical Mission Societies in the U.S., says that he helps the children use the chance to reflect on the blessings they enjoy that millions of children around the world don't have. And for more, we turn now to Alexandra Holden, a director of the Missionary Childhood Association, which helped organize the event. Alexandra, great to be with you today. You know, we mentioned that 77 Catholic schools participated in the rosary via Zoom. Tell us more about that. How many children took part and who led the prayers?
Yes. So what's wonderful about the event that took place yesterday is that the children actually led the prayers themselves. We started planning for this back before the new year, and we reached out to different diocesan directors, people that work for the Pontifical Mission Societies within the diocese, to help us engage some schools and some students to participate in this. And so we reached out to five different dioceses, and they found the schools that would lead the prayers for us. And while there were five schools leading the prayers, there were 77 schools that signed up, and we're not sure actually how many classrooms and how many children in total, because we were only able to see through the screen. So there was about over 100 people that joined on that Zoom, and some classrooms were joined together. Some people were in their gymnasiums praying with us. So it was lovely to hear the voices of the children and to have the prayer be led by them themselves.
Oh, that's so beautiful. What do you hope the children learn from the virtual rosary?
Well, for a lot of the children that joined, I think it was their first time hearing about the World Mission Rosary. And a little for anybody who's listening, the World Mission Rosary was developed by Archbishop Fulton Sheen, who was our previous national director of the Pontifical Mission Societies. And when he developed this rosary, he kind of wanted to kind of embrace the world in prayer. And it highlights five regions of the world. There's the grasslands of Africa. White is green. That first decade is green for the grasslands of Africa. Blue for Oceania. Yellow for the Morning Star of Asia. And white for Europe, and red for the fire of faith that brought missionaries to America. So we prayed that special rosary to not only share about this rosary with the children, but also to bring their attention to children in the missions in those areas that are in Catholic schools that need our prayers and need our material support. So through yesterday's service, we were able to pray for all five of those regions and have the children in the Midwest pray for them. So yeah. That was the whole idea behind why we did this.
Oh, that's so wonderful. And as you mentioned, you know, it is here in the U.S., it's Catholic Schools Week. What other initiatives do you have planned?
Yes, so all over the country this week, there are children who are not only praying the World Mission Rosary like we did yesterday, but they are also creating World Mission Rosaries. A lot of people who participate in the missionary childhood, they make rosaries at their schools and they send them off to children in the missions. Also during Catholic Schools Week, actually, tomorrow's Thursday, I believe the theme for Thursday is vocations. So as a mission-oriented nonprofit, we love bringing attention to the importance of vocation, and whether there's children who in the comfort of their own homes want to be missionary where they are, or if they want to grow up and maybe take that missionary calling and travel the world and be able to be the hands and feet of Jesus. So that's just a little bit of what's happening during this Catholic Schools Week. As they're appreciating their own Catholic faith, we hope that we're also planting the seeds for them to go out and be able to learn more about their brothers and sisters and to really grow within their own faith.
Yeah, that is so important. Alexander, great to be with you. And thank you so much for sharing this with us and for all that you do. God bless.
Absolutely. Thank you for bringing attention to it.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.